puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time to put you back into Manitoba today for our monthly installment of Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsmer joins me now. Hello, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Now, I wasn't here last time you were in the studio, so remind the listeners and tell me what your clue was from last time.
Sure. Well, I reminded people that here in Winnipeg, we have something called Van Horn Street. Brandon has Van Horn Avenue, and I said that today we would talk about something called Van Horn Farm and explain how all these places got their name.
So how did they get their name?
Well, they commemorate a fellow named William Cornelius Van Horn. And anybody who's a big fan of railway history probably recognizes that name. Back in the 1880s, when the Canadian Pacific Railway was being built across Canada, William Cornelius Van Horn was recruited to take it west, to start here in Winnipeg and head to the coast. And so between 1881 and 1885, the CPR basically was created by this forceful American. He wasn't American. He was actually originally from Illinois. And in fact, there's an interesting little tidbit there. He was recruited by a fellow named James J. Hill, who was also a big railway builder. And the interesting thing I've always found is that Van Horn was an American that came to Canada to build railways. James J. Hill was a Canadian who went to the United States to build railways.
A little crossover there. Mm-hmm. Did he remain building in Canada?
Van Horn, that is?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, say he built the Canadian Pacific. He was with the Canadian Pacific then through the last part of the 19th century. He built, the railway and saw it through to success. By the time we get to the 20th century, he's now in rather poor health. And so by 1899, he decides to retire from the CPR. He didn't entirely retire, though, from railway building. He ended up building railways in Cuba and in Guatemala. But in mid-1899, he returned to Manitoba to begin a new project. And in fact, there was lots of speculation as to why he came back to Manitoba. The people were thinking, well, he was here to perhaps build some big new facility for the Canadian Pacific Railway. He started buying land, and that was what sort of got people a little curious. Land in between Selkirk and Tyndall. People may recall that, of course, this area is a fairly important area for stone deposits. There's a lot of limestone around Garson, for example. And they thought, well, maybe the CPR is trying to get a handle on gravel. They're going to get gravel from these various stone deposits. But it turns out, no, it was Van Horn himself wanting to get into farming.
So tell me about this farm.
Well, this wasn't a farm like you and I might think of as a farm. It was not a small affair at all, in fact. As opposed to the typical farm of Manitoba at the time, which would probably be somewhere between 160 acres and maybe 320 acres, Van Horn went big. In fact, he ended up, by the time he was finished purchasing land in that vicinity, he had 4,000 acres. Now, today, that doesn't seem like a lot. There are actually quite a lot of farms that are over 4,000 acres. But at that time, that was absolutely massive. And so it's what we might think of as sort of maybe the first example of a large corporate farm. And it wasn't Van Horn who was going to farm it either. He was merely the owner of the property. He hired people to do the work for him.
And how cutting edge was this farm?
Well, in a lot of ways, it was really an innovative farm. In fact, that was part of his motivation for establishing it. He wanted to showcase sort of new techniques. So some of the land that he had purchased wasn't the best in terms of farming. And so his workers would go out and they would clear stones and do various other things to improve it, to make it more suitable for farming. Well, in fact, we've talked in a previous episode of this series about experimental farms, and that was a very common practice in that period. You know, they wanted to show farmers how to farm. And I think in some ways, Van Horn saw this as his responsibility, too, to show other farmers in the vicinity what could be done with sort of modern scientific techniques. So, say, they cleared land, they built huge barns. I've seen a picture of it. They had these very large barns, which they had animals and livestock of various kinds. They had a farmyard. They had the cropland. They had herds. So, for example, they had a whole bunch of horses because, of course, at that time, the horses did most of the actual farm work. They had Clydesdales, which are those, you know, those really big, heavy horses. They had shorthorn cattle, purebred shorthorn cattle. They had sheep. They had pigs. They had chickens. It was a fairly diverse farm in its day. And say, by all accounts, it was a really modern, innovative farm.
So what happened to Van Hoorn's farm?
Well, it carried on. He himself would only come by periodically. He was not a regular visitor, apparently. He would come by just unannounced for a short visit and go away again. But by the time he died in 1915, it was really a well-established operation. In fact, it continued on after he died for another 20 years. The Van Hoorn farm didn't sort of dissipate until about 1935. But by that time, of course, that's now in the Great Depression. Things were not looking great. And his estate decided to sell off the Van Hoorn farm. And I think fortunately, because it was such a big farm, of course, it was costly. You know, who do you sell a big farm like this to? Not one person probably has the means. Until along came a guy named Norman Leach.
Who was Norman Leach is the question.
Well, yeah, the name is not well known, I suppose. He was actually the son-in-law of a guy named Augustus Searle. Now, the Searle name, for people of a certain age, they'll recall, I think, that name, because until the sort of 1960s, that was a fairly prominent name in agriculture. The Searles had a grain company, Searle Grain. And all across the prairies, there were grain elevators, for example, emblazoned with the name Searle Grain. Augustus Searle himself was based in Minneapolis in the United States, but he sent his Canadian son-in-law, Norman Leach, to Winnipeg to establish a Canadian subsidiary. So I think Norman Leach thought, hey, you know, this farm, this big Van Hoorn farm could be a good showcase, you know, for our company, you know, showing the various other things that our company does. And so he purchased it and made it a department of the Searle Grain Company. And so here the name changes. It was no longer the Van Hoorn farm. It became the Searle farm. And he bought basically the whole thing. He bought like 3,900 acres, again, a vast area of land. He bought all the original buildings. And then they started to expand. So, for example, they got into laying chickens. They had had chickens before, but now these were going to be chickens that laid eggs, you know, and you could use them as a source of egg production. Interesting enough, the crops expanded too. Turns out Leach was one of the early investors in something called the Manitoba Sugar Company. We've talked about that before,
yep,
too. They, were, of course, were the ones that took sugar beets and turned them into refined white sugar. Well, because Leach was one of the early investors, they got into sugar beets. So they began growing large numbers of sugar beets on the property. In fact, as people may remember, sugar beets are a very labor-intensive crop. And so, for example, during the Second World War, they got in a number of workers to help tend these sugar beets.
Who were the workers on the farm?
Well, if you think about where we are, we're, say, just a little east of Selkirk. Well, in Selkirk, of course, is the building or the facility we call today the Selkirk Mental Health Center. At that time, it was known as the Selkirk Hospital for the Insane. They got patients from the hospital to come and tend sugar beets. During the Second World War, they got Japanese Canadians who had been displaced from their homes in British Columbia, and they came to the Searle Farm to tend sugar beets. So it was quite a diverse place during the Second World War.
What happened to the Searle Farm?
Well, I suppose just as the Van Hoorn farm wrapped up in the early 1960s, I think the Searles were getting a little tired of the whole business. They sold off the cattle herd. They sold off the hogs by the mid-1960s. The boarding house where they had put up a lot of these workers that they'd had over the years, it was closed in 1966, demolished. In fact, the Searles sold the grain company in 1967. Searle Grain merged with something called Federal Grain, and the Searle name disappeared. It became known as Federal Grain after that point. So that's why I say, unless you're of a certain age, you may not recognize the Searle name, but I say up until 1967, Searle Grain, very prominent on the prairies. But unfortunately, there weren't a lot of takers for the rest of the farm. You know, I say it was a very large area, it had all these big barns and such. And so they finally, after the farm had sat sort of vacant for about 3 years, they decided to subdivide it into smaller farms. So they sold off the dairy in 1971. They sold off the nursery. They had a series of greenhouses. They sold those in 1977. And then the rest of it, the feedlot and most of the farmland, about 2,500 acres of it, they sold to something called Right Angle Farms. And I wasn't able to find out very much about that. Maybe some of our listeners may be able to tell me more. All I nearly know about it is that this farm operated for a few years. The last reference I can find to it is from 1979. So what I suspect happened is that they basically tore down all the buildings. And today, there's virtually none of the buildings left. If you go there, there's none of the big barns are still there. In fact, I was led to believe that, in fact, the barns and everything else was gone. So one time I was going out Highway 59, sort of in that general vicinity, and I was thinking to myself about, you know, the Searle Farm, the old Van Horn Farm, and I thought, well, it's too bad that there's nothing left. And then I noticed over the trees a couple of silos. And I thought, wow, those kind of look familiar. So I turned off the highway. I drove in. And it turns out I have seen an old historical picture of the Van Horn Farm. And you see all these big barns and so on. And behind one of the barns are these two silos. So there we are. There's the sign of the old Van Horn Farm. Well, today the site is owned by a gentleman who has a construction company, and I think it's pretty much all gone. The remains of the farm are basically the only left are these two silos, but they are still there. He did tell me, though, when I stopped in for a visit, that he was planning to take them down. So I don't know how much longer we'll have this visible sign of this once vast corporate farm.
Long run as well for that farm.
Indeed, that's right.
Gordon, thank you so much. What's the clue for next month?
Well, if I say the word Assisippi, some of our listeners may think of a ski resort in western Manitoba, or they may think of a provincial park. We're going to discuss a place where over 100 years ago, we could have found all the trappings of a town. There was a grist mill, a brickworks, a cheese factory. Today, all gone.
Have to wait until July to find out why. Gordon, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.